Welcome to the 14th podcast episode of With Students in Mind. My name is Matt Townsley, my co-host.
Russ Guerin. It's hard to believe 14, Matt. That's kind of crazy.
14, wow. That's incredible. Russ, how should we introduce this guy we have with us, man? He seems kind of like an all-star that we just started to get to know a little bit through the Twitterverse.
And you and I both kind of have Waverly roots, both graduating from Wartburg, and really the first time we ever met, Matt, back in Earth Science, or what is it, Earth Sciences?
Earth and Environmental Science.
There you go, yep.
A lab every week, a field trip every week.
That's right. That's right. Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me. I like the notion that maybe I'm becoming a bit of a, as Bridget Wagner would say, a rock star. I don't know if that's quite true, but I tell you, I've really enjoyed, getting to know people on Twitter, and that's kind of a whole nother conversation. But best PD I've ever had. It's wonderful. But so I'm relatively new to Twitter, and blogging. I started my own blog, Middleman 2012. I've been at Waverly Shawrock Middle School now for I think it's 11 years, and opened up a brand new building last year, which was incredible. Last year was just a blur, and now this year we've all kind of settled in, and the normal routine of middle school life is beginning. But yes, we got an incredible facility and every tool we could possibly want.
Wow, that's really cool. And you're actually at the middle school right now, is that right?
Yep, I'm sitting here in my office. I was trying to figure out what the best configuration is light-wise and what wouldn't show my bald spot or my thin line. And so I chose this one. So behind me, I got this great set of windows that I can sit and watch the ducks and geese fly in off the pond by CUNA Mutual, which you guys will know. And as an avid hunter, man, it's just killing me. It's tearing me up having to sit here and watch this day in and day out. So 2 more weeks and I'll be shooting some geese.
Very nice.
Tell us a little bit about, I think one thing that people would recognize Waverly Shellrock for is that you guys went one-to-one iPads this year. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I tell you what, man, that was absolutely an incredible journey. And I don't want to diminish this point that I'm about to make, but it was literally, as the cliche would be, building the plane in flight. We were flying by the seat of our pants. We were... It all started with our tech guy, Matt Nelson, doing a quick count of the computers that we were going to need inside this new facility. And when it was all said and done, Matt comes up to me and he says, "Hey, boss," which I love, he says that, how many computers were we looking at? And told him, and we were close to 500. And he says, "Well, shoot, we're almost one-to-one right now." So we went and pitched the idea to our superintendent, and he listened, and I said, it's actually going to save us. I think the number was like $125,000, somewhere in that neighborhood overall, cost of the number of computers we were going to need to the number of iPads. We got Bridget on the phone and said, "Bridget, here's the deal." And next thing you know, we had the blessing to start putting the package together and see what it was going to look like. So, the whole opening of our school was incredible because we have everything we need. There's nothing we don't. I mean, it's almost embarrassing to say there's absolutely nothing we need at this point. Maybe a little, maybe a bigger pipeline for some more data to flow. But, man, we got everything, guys, and there's no reason for us not to be successful. So we're very blessed.
Wow. We Googled you around a little bit, Steve, and I think it's worth noting that you were the 2011 Iowa Middle School Principal of the Year. So I've never won an award. Russ has never won an award that I'm aware of. You're once again, as we traditionally do on this podcast, a much bigger deal than we are. So thanks for joining us today.
That's the idea.
You guys have got your own podcast going, man. That's incredible. I'm just a fat middle-aged man sitting here trying to figure out how the world works and how this technology is working. And thank God I got some good training wheels with Bridget and our tech guy, and stole a gem from Waterloo School, Sarah Lauk. Matt Nelson's incredible. So I'm just taking all the glory. That's my goal. I'm all flash and no substance.
You fit in well here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, man. I was the 2011 NASSP Middle School Principal of the Year. I'm not even sure. I think I think Mr. Wilcox, Roger Wilcox, I think he nominated me. And that was basically the year before we moved. That process started the year before we moved into the new school. So it was my last year at the junior high, you know, for me anyway. And that was really special. And just, you know, what a neat deal. And went out to Washington, D.C. and met a lot of incredible people who have far more interesting stories than I can generate in Little Waverly, Iowa. So, but thank you for looking that up. So I've got my, Roger and I both have our Wonder Twin Power rings, Prince of the Earrings. So whenever we need some superpowers, we put them together and we're rocking it. So.
Love it.
That's great. You know, as we understand, Steve, you have spent your entire career basically in working in middle schools. And I happen to know a little, maybe a known fact to you and maybe to Russ, is I did a part of my student teaching in your building in the old Waverly Shell Rock Middle School.
Was I there?
Yeah, you were the principal.
You saw my amazingness firsthand then.
I can talk about that after the show.
Oh God! Okay. All right. So you really made an impression on me.
Yeah, you obviously didn't remember me, so. That goes to show something.
Yeah. No, that's who did you student teach with?
I student taught with John Serrata.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Well, shoot. But yeah, it was, you know, we have a lot of tremendous teachers. We have a lot of people go through our system with Wartburg. Wartburg's been really giving us some great teachers. I think my guesstimation is we're probably 80% Wartburg Knight teachers, and as a UNI Panther, that's just, you know, but every once in a while a blind sow finds an acorn and found some gems from Wartburg.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, in addition to your just the humor that you bring, I think, to your school and to the leadership you bring to Waverly Shell Rock Middle School, you know, the one of the reasons we asked you to join our podcast today is because we heard through Bridget, actually, about this thing that you're doing that has been labeled as creating passion-based learning experiences for students, drum roll, blah, 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 in study hall.
Exactly.
Tell us more about what this looks like.
Okay, you know, and this is going to take a little bit to kind of explain because the background is really important. And the reason I believe the background is important because I think it's really the hallmark of how many of us that are in education and in environments work when we don't often have time to put a huge R&D department together to try to figure out if this is, you know, statistically the right thing to do. We go by our gut. We have great past experience. But here's how it all kind of came about. When we went through some staff reductions a couple years back, it chipped away at what we call the bottom of our schedule, which, you know, the term I would use would be your exploratory courses. And so like many middle schools, our team model has been able, that we've had in place since 2002, has really been able to absorb several layers of cuts, and we've not had to implode the system like some of my colleagues have done with their schedules. And we've been able to keep a lot of elements in place. One of our more challenging aspects, however, is there's always the issue of study hall, aka the great holding pen of middle school hormones and idiocy. I love it. So when we got to this point this past year, our schedule changed to the point where we were going to be having some students with perhaps 84 minutes of study hall back-to-back, two periods. Huge waste of time. Purely a function of our schedule. And to be very honest with the listeners, if I had time to get into the decision that I needed to make, it's kind of complex in terms of trying to explain it in this format. But it came down to backing off a commitment that I had made to some teachers about keeping our family consumer science, art, and GTT teacher embedded in the core rotation of classes and on teams, so that instead of that work appearing to be add-on stuff that kids were doing, it was now being embedded into the work that they were doing in their math classrooms. And that's a whole nother story. But the simple fact was by making that decision, it forced this problem. So oh gosh, I think it's been maybe several months ago, even maybe before school is out, I tweeted this concept of flipping study halls. What would it like if we could flip study halls? And I don't think I asked the question the right way because I only got two people to respond. In fact, Matt, maybe one of you, maybe you were one, I don't know, but Carrie Schleter was one of them, and then Ryan Cunningham up at Okoboji Middle School. And they just basically said, keep me posted. And one person said, I'm really not sure what that means. So I had to step back and kind of rethink it. And then in this summer in late July, I got a group of teachers. I said, here's what I'd like to do. And the person that I hired to run our study halls, if you will, she has her MBA from Iowa State. And this is like a gift from the education gods. And she's a very skilled, talented young lady. And I told her during the interview, I'm looking for somebody who can help me rethink these wasted study hall minutes. And she was all on board. We got a group together in July. And part of that discussion in July and into August, and literally right before workshop, days before students came in, part of that vision was the concept of putting a passion-based element into a student's individualized learning plan. In other words, an individualized learning plan for all kids. And so part of that, and I think, Matt, what you're referring to is that passion-based learning component. Every day these kids come and they have to take what we give them, so to speak. Unless you've got a great democratic setup in your classroom, a lot of what we're still forced to do is what the core curriculum or whatever says. But we wanted to get passion. We wanted to give our students, our middle school kids, an opportunity to tell us, this is what gets me excited about learning. This is what I want to know more about. And now I've got time in my master schedule to do this. How can we do it? And that was really kind of the thinking behind this passion-based learning model that we're slowly parsing out over the next several months. So far, we're not at the passion-based stuff, but we're at the building of their individualized learning plan. So we're going to get there, but it's another building the plane in flight situation.
So does every student have study hall?
Our data says that approximately 85% will have at least one study hall every day. My son, way back in the day in this schedule, I called him a non-kid, and that was in reference to kids that were not in band and chorus. And those kids that were not in band and chorus had tons of study hall time. The good thing about our schedule, and I love our master schedule, to me I think it's almost the perfect schedule. The good part about it is you can absorb and implement a lot of teachers and build your FTEs and do great stuff with it, but you can also absorb cuts. But when you start to absorb cuts, you start to create holes, which create tough decisions on what you want to have students doing. Do you require them to do certain things? Do you allow them to have study halls, et cetera? So we struck this compromise this year with what we call now extension period, which is our study hall period, which is driving my secretary crazy, because why not just call it study hall? And I said, part of its name, we have to create a different mindset, and the term extension was built off the notion of we want to make those minutes an extension of a child's classroom experiences, and we also want to make them an extension of what their passion is. So that's where the name came from.
Back in the day, Steve, when I was in your building, you had ER, enrichment and remediation. Is that what this is, or is this something different?
It's the ER that you knew that was at the end of the day, I believe, Matt, is now at the beginning of the day called advisory, and that still is our quote-unquote enrichment remediation period, but now that band and chorus are occupying a larger chunk of that time, we have fewer students that are available to teachers for that advancement or for the enrichment and remediation, which is why this extension concept had been sitting in the back of my mind last spring going, our teachers are not getting to the number of kids that could use that ER time, Matt, that you knew. And this was my first shot over the bow saying, we've got to recapture these open available minutes. We just have to. In fact, I'm heading to an exchange club meeting next month to talk about this very concept, how all of us in education are trying to squeeze every possible minute out of our school day to better prepare our students. So Yeah, it's. I'm glad you remember that, and it's still hung around, but it's morphed several times.
Cool. Very cool. So next question for you, Steve. It kind of piggybacks off this. We just explained this passion-based reinventing study hall. If I'm a seventh grade student at Waverly Shawhawk Middle School in 2012, how does my school experience look different now than it would have if I was in school 5, 10, or 15 years ago?
There's an old Japanese saying, and I wish I could quote it better, but it's something like, in America, teacher work hard, students work less. In Japan, students work hard, teachers work less, or something like that. You're probably familiar with that. The fact that we're in a 1927 building, one thing back before this building opened, we did a tremendous job. Very proud of the work our kids did and our parents did, our teachers did. And we put in all of our own wireless access points, router points. We really pretty much retrofitted, you know, that old pig into a really, really nice learning facility. Wonderful school. We had a great culture there. But it was a three-story building, no air conditioning. It was warm. It was either really warm or really cold all the time. We had decent technology for the time. You know, we went through the laptop phase. We went through the netbook mobile lab phase. And now, of course, we're sitting here in a two-story building, climate-controlled, one-to-one technology initiative, everything at our disposal. So if, you know, Matt, I think you came to, I think both of you came to that open house we had in February. I wish I could take people through the old junior high, because I'm so proud of what we accomplished in that building with the limited resources we had and where we're at now. But it's a true testimony to the caliber of teachers that we have. So, you know, all great schools, and I believe we're a great school, all great schools start with great teachers, and we just got top drawer people. And if I had been smart enough, Matt, I probably would have seen your resume at some point and hired you if there was an opening. Have we?
You never know. You never know, Steve.
Russ, you're off the list. Bridget said that you're not allowed, though.
That's all right. I'll talk to her about that.
All right. So that's kind of what I think kids would see right now. I mean, if you, it's really literally going from your mom and dad's or your grandma's school environment to you know, the Jetsons, if you will. So again, you know, we're very blessed, and we don't mean ever to be braggadocious, but we are blessed with such a great opportunity here that if we screw this up, I need to be fired and drive UPS truck or something.
So here's what I'm looking for, and I'm guessing that this is probably what our one viewer is also looking for. So like practically speaking, you know, if I'm a student in the study hall, you know, because this is something I'm thinking about. It sounds great. So how can I talk to my colleagues about it? You know, what does it actually look like on the ground during those 42 minutes or however long that period is? What am I doing in extension?
Okay. Currently, where we're at right now in its evolution, Russ, is the first 10 minutes our students are required to read. And that's just part of our larger reading initiative. Nothing sexy or fancy. It's just part of our overall reading initiative. And our other requirement, which I think you'll appreciate, Russ, is that they're required to read from a book. We don't let them read off the iPad. Some kids read off their Kindle, which is fine, but we don't want screen time with the iPad. We want kids, and I just did a book chat on Where the Red Fern Grows with one of our language arts teachers, and I think there's still something pretty magical about having that paper in your hand in that book. So that's our first 10 minutes. The next 20 to 25 minutes, if you will, students are allowed to work on what they need to work on right now at this point. But starting next week, I'll be working with our 7th and 8th grade students, and we will start building their ILP. So we're going to be taking some of those minutes from them. So they're going to have to start planning differently, because some of those minutes are not guaranteed, and we're going to start building their ILP and their academic goal setting and their performance goal setting there. And then the last 10 minutes, and I just did this today with my second period 8th graders, we use a software online assessment program called NAIKU. It's N-A-I-K-U is how it's spelled. We've had it now for about 2.5 years. This year, the one-to-one initiative has really let us tap into the to the resources of NYQU to do online formative assessments. And what we'll start doing with those students next week is they, in NYQU, we have an assessment called Extension Log. And when the teacher releases that assessment, students will have about 10 minutes to document how they use their extension time. And the goal there is for them to keep a running log of their learning and what they're working on, so that when it's time to share out with parents at some point, whether it's our February conferences or, you know, if we have a parent-teacher meeting, we can pull up their assessment and say to mom and dad, here's your child's learning log. They've told us, and this is the cynical side, they've told us that they've used it for math every single day, and yet the grade is, you know, a D or whatever. So then we turn to little Russ or little Maddie and say, what gives? What's the real story here? So there's a little bit of CYA there, but here's what I saw happening, which is really, really cool. And if I'm getting too loud or fast, tell me, because this stuff, I'm a nerd, it excites me. When I handed out this kid's last year's report cards to them so that they could start building their ILP and put their past learning data in, I was having kids look at their report cards and going, oh, I didn't think I was gone that many days. I was really tardy that many days, or yeah, I kind of screwed off in math, you know. Sarah Cooper, our tag teacher, nailed this one on the head. When we were planning this in October, in August, she said, you know, I really think there's going to be something powerful when a student sees what they did last year in that report card snapshot, and they're asked to set a goal and have them go, this is what I was last year, and now they're asking me to be different or to set goals. Now I have to decide how honest I'm going to be. So what kind of goals am I going to set? And that NYQU Extension Log assessment is one more feature that students are going to use to build this profile. The end desired result, guys, is when students walk out of here at the end of this next year as a 7th or 8th grader, they're going to have this learning log and or profile or snapshot of their academic and school performance. They're going to have a log from NYQU that has all this data and information. We're going to compile it all together and plop it into Infinite Campus in the PLP, so it becomes a traveling living document that the next set of teachers who have that child can click on it and see exactly or pretty close to exactly what that child did the year before. So in what will happen in those middle 20 minutes, Russ, to kind of go a little bit further, the goal with the passion-based learning component is going to be where Katie, our extension period supervisor, is going to start working with students through NYQU again to gather what are the areas of interest. Tell us what you want to learn about. And she's going to begin to use that to put students into their own, what I'm calling their own individualized learning community, or ILC, which my teachers hate all the acronyms that I use. But we want kids to begin to start to put together their own professional learning community or their own individualized learning community based on what has them excited and what they're passionate about. And that's kind of the whole thing in a nutshell for us right there. So pretty wordy, windy answer, but I hope I, you know, captured it all.
No, I think I'm starting to be able to picture it. I won't say not to put you on the spot, but right. To put you on the spot, so I like video. I like working with video. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where that fits in, like, the standards. You know, I don't know where that fits in traditional school, like in the system of math right. and science and stuff. Is that something I'm able to go after? Like, I'm picturing if I'm a kid and I've got an iPad that you guys gave me, I might have to physically leave the room to capture some of my stuff. You know, is that something that's, you know, absolutely. In the plan?
Absolutely, Russ. In fact, we have our band teacher, Denise Grettinger. Great. This is a great scenario you presented. She's even at the point where she said, if you have students that want to do something with music and they either want to compose or they want to find their own music or record their own stuff for their passion-based learning project, they can come down to our band room and sit in one of our soundproof band, you know, rehearsal rooms and just start working away. I'll make up X number of passes they can give to Miss Hoffman. Boom, they're off, and now they're working on their passion-based stuff. The trick is going to be is getting kids, once they identify it and they're excited, hopefully, the trick is going to be not every day can be a PBL day for you. Some days, you know, and that's the coaching part is you're going to have to do the meat and potato stuff at some point, but learn how to budget your time and do the passion base. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Russ, if you and some kids wanted to start doing and start learning about stop motion, you know, animation or movies, I can't cite the core curriculum, but I have no doubt that we could not find something within the core curriculum that they could link it to, and that's actually a part of the ILP when we build it is, where does this link into either WSR's curriculum / the core curriculum? Mm-hmm. So it's going to force them to kind of delve into that and see that we're actually teaching stuff that we're asked to have students do. We're just not making up this goofy stuff, you know, on a Saturday afternoon. So great
question. I love two things about what you said. The first is that you're teaching them those skills. Like, I mean, those are skills that I need as an adult now. I've got a 2.5-year-old kid. I've got a full-time teaching job, and I really do like doing video stuff on the side. So I have to budget my time. You know, I can't spend all day every Saturday doing this hobby video stuff. Right. I have to know when I can do it, when I can't. So I love that they're getting that stuff already. Second thing is, like what you said about the band teacher, you know, so there are these students, my wife and I, we've been watching The Voice, mm-hmm. Which I don't watch a lot of TV, but we've been kind of enamored with this. And last night, they had, I think, four singers got chosen who were all teenagers. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking to myself, we've got these kids in our buildings who could be national superstars, you know, and the thing I love about it is it's unleashing, it seems like they're connecting with the adults in the building who exactly. also have these passions.
Yep. I've got boys that come up to me, and even girls, my little Hannah, eighth grade girl, she's all of, you know, this tall, about this round. She comes up and taps me on the shoulder the other day, and I said, "Hey, you look tired. What's up? Are you mad?" She goes, "Nope, tired." And I said, "What are you tired about?" "Well, I was up at 4 deer hunting." And right now, you talk about patting a guy's heart, you're going, okay. So I said, tell me about it. And she goes, "Well, I missed out on a doe, but then I had a 5-point buck come in, and I couldn't get my gun up fast enough. And I could just see this little girl, this little tiny pumpkin out in the woods with mom or dad pulling up on this, you know, nice 5-point deer." Now, what I have with Hannah now every day, every single day, she says hi to me, good morning. She'll chat with me. But before, we were just kind of like two ships passing. And now we have this connection. And I think, Russ, that's the power of this passion-based learning component. When the students really get into it, is they're going to find adults that are real human beings that have the same passions. Some love music. Some love video. Some want to fly. Some love to hunt. Some love to, you know, just read. I mean, you name it. And that's the whole goal, is to open up this world that we're not these, you know, teacher robots that are heartless. There are things that may give us joy that we love to do. And hopefully when these kids begin to match up and say, "Wow, Mr. So-and-so, or Mr. Quiggle, I didn't know you loved to hunt waterfowl." Absolutely. I spent 20 minutes in my language arts teacher's class, Miss Toy, on the Where the Red Fern Grows, talking about the whole culture back then of raccoon hunting and why it was so vital to so many families. And a girl throws her hand up and says, "Hunting is gross, hunting's stupid, it's cruel." And I said, absolute valid point of view. And we spun into this fabulous discussion, and these girls and boys are going, "That the first time and only time I have with my dad is when he takes me hunting on opening deer season or opening duck." Man, you can't get that stuff in the core curriculum, folks, I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. That's the good stuff. So that's what we're trying to hope to, you know, to eventually get into this whole PBL and our extension program. So
I'm sold. I love it.
I think, you know, with that girl hitting a little chord with you there, Steve, I think Steve, you just hit a chord with Russ there.
Where the red fern grows.
Well, not only that, but just the whole, like, you know, dude, you know, if you got an interest in this thing, let's embrace that and get after it, you know.
Absolutely. I'm really tired of I saw a great cartoon one day where there was a river, And the river was filled with a bunch of students, you know, like on rafts and swimming. But there was a dam, and the dam was the metaphor for the public school or schools in general. And then below the dam, you saw these kids that were going down that were able to go through that system in the right way that we have designed it on our terms. And all these kids are sitting behind that dam going, dude, you know, why are you holding me back? There's things that I could be doing, but because we have this silly system that says you can only progress at this rate because we don't know what we would do with you if you get past fourth grade and you're doing sixth grade work, and my God, what are we going to do with you? We got to get over ourselves. We simply have to get over ourselves as educators, and learning is not a linear endeavor. It's just not. And one of my biggest proponents of the whole passion-based concept is one of our teachers who homeschools his kids. And this was the whole concept several years ago that was germinating in my mind when he said, one of my children chose to study the Civil War that year. And everything he did, he was just infatuated with the Civil War. Everything he did, math, science, reading, was all about the Civil War. That was his passion. Why not that and use it as the vehicle to learn about other stuff? That stuck in my mind, and now we're able to, you know, maybe bring it to fruition for some kids here at our school. So we believe the potential's there. You know, maybe come this spring we can do this again and I can give you some more details, but we're very excited about it at this point.
Me too. I'm stealing the whole thing.
Well, I got some documents I can share, but, you know,
yes, please.
Here's the best part, guys, that, you know, being relatively new to Twitter, and I'm going to give you guys a serious, you know, some serious props here. You know, Bridget really got me started on this a couple years back, and I called her one day on my phone. I said, Bridget, I just inadvertently asked another superintendent about a job opening. Is that like everywhere in the world now? And she went back, yes, you idiot. And I'm panicking trying to figure out, because I was just curious about this job. So anyway, I'd been real hesitant to use Twitter. The last maybe year and a half now, it has been my go-to PD. And guys like you, you two and what you're doing, I think you guys at your age and your skill set are really now becoming the people that are taking that great big flipping sledgehammer that we need and starting to beat that dam to death and get rid of that for our kids. Because with this platform, imagine what students could and should be doing if we would allow them in school to have a Google Hangout with a professional of their choice and learn from them while they're sitting in study hall. Why not let them learn? Why not? And we just, like I said, I did a blog a while back about the 3 G's in education for young administrators and teachers. Get over yourself. Get into yourself. That's the reflection piece. And then get yourself out there. Start telling the world what you believe. And this whole format now, I think, has begun to really legitimately revolutionize education. And you guys are doing a fantastic job with that. And you are one of the first two recommendations from Bridget to follow. So thank you for all you guys have been doing as the bright up and coming stars in our profession.
Thanks, Steve. Hey, Matt, what do you think about that? Dreaming big, living outside the box. What do you think?
I dig it. But you know, in this partnership, Russ, I'm the realist. You're the dreamer. I mean, that's just how we run this show. So. But I agree. I mean, but.
So let me flip a question. Let's do a hangout flip here, Matt.
What? Where's that on the script?
This is not in the script.
You just lost control of this, my friend. So tell me about, you know, your relationship. What are you seeing when you say you're the realist? You know, Bridget and I talk a lot about having bat blank crazy ideas. And, I'm just curious to, you know, where you're at in all this, because you're out there. I follow your tweets and it's great stuff. You know, where are you at in how social media and?
Oh, I believe in all these and you know, Russ and I kind of in our conversations, whether it's public conversations or family dinner conversations, whatever it might be, I just tend to go back to the edge of the box. And I think that's because of my context working in a school district, probably a lot like yours, Steve, who had a very engaged community where the school board doesn't just vote yes on everything. They really ask great questions that really make us think, why are we doing this? Calculated risks, yes, but a risk without a lot of empirical evidence or a really great thought-out reason, those are not always embraced at the systems level.
Right.
There's a lot of permissions. There's a lot of permission in our school at the building level to take risks at the at the classroom level, but as far as going out on a limb and trying something just really out there, that really takes a lot of thought, research, connections. You know, when I heard your story of, you know, your tech guy coming to you saying, oh, we can just do this iPad thing, and all of a sudden, you know, a couple months later, you're doing it. I don't know if that's our reality, just based on our local context. And I applaud you guys for doing that. And I can only look back, and I know we should always be looking forward, I can only look back and see how some of those risks have been attempted and they've not been embraced for various reasons, of which they're all in the history, all in the past.
If I could, and that helps me understand, you know, where you're coming from, because this, what you're talking about, I'm on the flip side of it, because I live in what I would call, and Russ and Matt, you know Waverly, you know our schools pretty well, you know the kind of clientele that we're able to put through our system. As the 7A as the 7A principal since, you know, before this building opened, our K-6 system is phenomenally strong. They're feeding us a very, very good product, okay? Here's what I've always told our teachers, and having taught in and been a principal in Tipton, Iowa, in Spencer, Iowa, Hickory, North Carolina for a year, you know, little tiny dang near poverty-stricken town in Correctionville, Iowa, where we had nothing, literally nothing. I have more copyright infringements than... say that, you know, I don't care. But I mean, we were used to having to build everything from nothing. Excuse me. I'm now sitting here in a system, and I've told our teachers this, our biggest enemy is that we have absolutely no sense of urgency in terms of staying viable.
Yes.
Nobody is knocking at our door saying, Waverly Shell Rock Schools, you're in jeopardy right now because your kids aren't learning. 88, 90, 92, 94% proficient math, reading, and assignment in a given year. Excuse me. We are in the biggest, in my opinion, aside from maybe probably Pella schools, but we're in the biggest low risk, high reward situation, that our ability to take risks and move fluidly, and as Bridget would say, more agile than others, only because we live in this low risk, high reward situation. We are not going to kill these learners, the only way we stand to kill these learners is if we retain the same old, same old. So when I look at schools that are truly under the gun and their sense of urgency is if we don't improve and we're no longer viable, we might be gone. I think that is the greatest asset any educator or school can have. And this is probably going to be my darkest comment that will probably get me the most criticism, but I'm going to say this very carefully. I believe in Iowa, in a majority of Iowa schools, the only way true reform and transformation is going to happen is if administrators, superintendents and principals and teachers are on 1 year contracts. That includes me, that if our school board or soup says, Steve, you're not doing what we think you need to be doing, get rid of me. And I'm perfectly okay with that. And the reason I'm perfectly okay with that is because I'm built in such a way that I will never rest. But until when somebody says you're no longer viable, we need to go a different direction, get me out of here. Because if somebody has a different vision and I'm blocking that vision because I'm holding on to my own thing, to me, that's what's keeping education from really transforming itself is because of, and again, I got to be careful with this, tenure does nothing to improve school systems when the inability of the powers that be, whether it's my superintendent or my school board, to say, Steve, you're gone, or for me is to talk to a teacher and say, you're not where we need you to be, I got to be able to find somebody that better matches this. In, before we were able to do that, and I did it in North Carolina, and I saw it firsthand, this is bad. I fired three teachers in the span of 3 months. But they were dead weight. They were ineffective. Everybody knew they needed to go. And when those three were gone, each time, three different times, people would come up to me and say, thank you for protecting, in a sense, thank you for protecting the integrity of the job I do. So I'm not being critical here in the sense of I'm picking on teachers. I'm saying all educators, most of us, do not live in this world where we are forced to live on the edge and always improve because we have that comfort and security of it's pretty darn hard to get rid of the average school person. So if that gets me assassinated through the back of the that's so weird. But I got to say it. I think all of us, there's nothing wrong, and this is kind of counter to what Glasser and total quality management principles goes against, but I believe this, there's nothing wrong with any of us working with a little sense of urgency and a little less security in order for us to stay viable as a system. And I think that for me is where that's the thing that keeps me up at night is how can schools, given the moral imperative we have, not keep the absolute best and brightest? And that includes your best and brightest administrators and teachers. Like I said, it's not a very popular position, and in fact, this is the most open I've ever been with this position. I don't mean it to be a Debbie Downer, but guys, people like you and Matt, Russ and Matt, you guys, the greatest gift I could give you as a building principal, because I can't give you extra money, I can't give you comp time all the time, would be for me to surround you with the absolute best and brightest, the home run hitters, so you can continually be the best you can be. Just my philosophy, shoot it down, but in Waverly, we're in a low-risk, high-reward environment, and there's no reason for us not to push the envelope every day.
I think the only thing that I would add, I'll just go first, Matt. The only thing that I would add is that I think, and you know this, Steve, it's easy for us to say. We're here at 9 o'clock at night on a Wednesday night, you know, reflecting publicly together about how to make school better for kids. So, you know, from our vantage point, we're always pushing to get better, you know. So, of course, you know, of course I'm on board with that because we're not talking about friends, you know, the colleagues that I've worked with for years. You know, we're not naming by name. So I'm with you. I mean, that's what I want is I want the best for kids and whatever that looks like.
And I think it takes forums like this for us all to get real about folks like us, like you said, 9 o'clock on a Wednesday, we all share a passion and our passion is the kids. And this is a great platform to share that. And if a few people get irritated by that comment, you know, maybe whether it's my comments or anybody's comments, you know, I saw Scott McCloud's podcast the other day. I watched it from the one you guys did. And there's things you're going, if that agitates me and I need to step back and reflect, what better thing for us to do as a professional learning community than to get agitated and step back and reflect without it being, you know, a finger pointing session. So I really hesitated about sharing that comment. But Matt, when you told me about your situation, I felt like, now is a good time to share that in my situation, the only sense of urgency we have is if our numbers drop. Otherwise, we're in a pretty good spot, guys. We're unlike many, many other schools. And there's times when I wish if I could end my career now in the next 5, 6, 7 years, I would seek out a school that was in a crisis or in jeopardy. And I would love to go in and start to build it from the ground up. Not that I'm the savior, but that to me is the thing that's my passion, is always pushing, pushing, pushing to see how we can get better. And that's, you know, that would be exciting. So,
Matt, you and I have talked about kind of the same concept. Like, Steve isn't naming it, but we've talked, it's like extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. You know, because one of the things, when you say, when you talk about sense of urgency, and you're talking about these external senses of urgency, you know, whereas for me as a classroom teacher, I've got 60 kids tomorrow, that's my sense of urgency. Like, if I'm not bringing it for them, that's, yep. You know, I'll leave at the end of the day just going like, that was a waste of their time, you know. And it just kind of goes back to what you were saying about just getting those people who have those same feelings, you know, for students, where it's just a built-in sense of urgency. I only get my kids for 180 days a year. I want to use every single one of them.
Yeah. And what I like about that, Russ, is a common theme in our building when we're talking about schedule changes or we're talking about moving this to here. The best problem that I have, but it drives me kooky, is the fact that all of our teachers want all of our kids all the time. Everyone feels they need to have as many minutes as possible. What a great problem for me to have. Mm-hmm. That's the blessings that I live under right now. My question for you and for perhaps those that are, you know, that end up listening to this, if they can endure me to this part of the podcast, is, you know, Russ, where does that intrinsic motivation come from for guys like you and Matt? You know, how come you're hardwired to want to spend a Wednesday night putting together a podcast when in the back of your mind you got 60 some kids that are waiting for you and you got a wife and family? You know, how do you arrive at that? How do you two sustain that? And that to me is would be a fascinating discussion some point, you know, to learn from folks. Like the last question, Matt, I think you sent me in that in the email before is, what keeps you up at night? What keeps me up at night is, because Waverly-Shawrock Middle School is in a low-risk, high-reward environment, we get a great product by the time they get to us, in my case, seventh grade. We have much fewer challenges than many schools, so the need and the desire to continue to grow and evolve, that's a hard thing to sell when you have a teacher going, but Steve, when we talk about 92% proficiency in language art or in reading, we're talking about 27 kids that are not proficient, you know, in our student population. Well, not that many probably, but you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. 17 kids or whatever. What else can we do? And I think that's the toughest challenge for so many of our teachers today is, when does this gerbil hamster wheel stop in terms of, you know, are we ever going to get to the glass ceiling? I don't have a good answer for them. For me, it's just I can't rest. And maybe that's because my bottle of Ritalin just ran out.
You know, Steve, I'm just sitting here wanting to shout amen when you're talking about the demographics that you inherit. That's the world I live in too. And whether it's grading practices or collaboration with teachers or whatever that next thing is, it's difficult to create a sense of urgency, except for that core group that is up at doing the podcast at night or whatever, thinking through these things. I can think of an example of a teacher I talked to recently who is just so excited. And this isn't someone who's as young as Russ and myself, someone who's been in the business somewhere in between how long you've been in the business, Steve, and how long we've been in the business. So I know a middle-of-the-road career teacher, veteran teacher somewhere in there. This person literally sold their sporting event tickets for the weekend because they were going to be spending their entire Saturday working through their grading practices and how to make that a reality. I don't know. And I'd like to take credit for that because I believe that by implementing these grading practices in our school, we've made all of our teachers talk more about grading, assessment, and curriculum this year than ever before. You know, yeah. We're talking about teachers that have been in the business for 15 years and never have even questioned that. To me, that's a pretty big deal. For someone to give up their tickets to the Hawks game, and you're a season ticket holder, that's not easy.
That truly is an amen. I'd love to know who that person is and shoot. Because, you know, that's the stuff, Matt, you know, somewhere along the line, don't sell yourself short. Somewhere along the line, your enthusiasm and passion as a leader in your school, and Russ the same way, I'm sure, that by raising the bar and raising your game, you're making everybody else better. And for that veteran teacher to say, I got to look around and I still have a lot to give to do that, you know, that's a testament to your leadership. Don't sell yourself short. That's a direct influence that you guys are having on your colleagues and the people that you supervise.
But at the same time, there's still, and Russ and I both talk about this, there's still that group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's just like we are on an average day. We're going in, putting in our time so we can collect a paycheck, so we can go home and see our kids or wife or whatever, go hunting, whatever that hobby might be. But for us, for whatever reason, it's more than just a job. It's something that we would literally talk about rather than our, you know, I'd rather talk to you on Christmas about this than anything else.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
That's just the way it rolls. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
And I want to say one thing, though, is that I think I can speak for all of us when I say the percentage we're talking about is very small of people that are,
for sure,
however you want to classify it, you know, not here for the right reasons, not their heart's not in it, whatever. I mean, we're talking about, you know.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, it's not like I'm saying I go to school and all these people around me are lazy. That is the opposite of what I'm talking about. Right.
Yeah.
But I think, like you said, Steve, you know, when you talked about in North Carolina, there were just kind of three people who were just rocks in your shoe, and, you know, that it makes the walk a lot smoother when you can shake them out.
And they weren't there for kids, like your podcast name, you know, with kids in mind. He was a former engineer at Corning, and their plants were shutting down. And in North Carolina at the time, if you had a four-year degree at least, you could be hired on as a provisional teacher. And I hired him as a provisional algebra teacher. He was a pretty smart man. He had middle school girls of his own in that school. And I had to fire him because he couldn't make that leap into the middle school brain and education, and it just wasn't part of who he was. It literally was a paycheck, and try as he might to demonstrate that he could, my moral imperative was, I can't let this happen to kids. And it hurt. It was not fun. But I know the system was better when it happened. And I agree 100%, Russ. We're talking about a very, very skinny number, you know, of people. So we have to be careful there, and that's why I'm always hesitant to openly share this point of view, because it sounds like I'm coming from a principle, like I'm anti-teacher. I'm not. I am anti-slug teacher, anti-slug administrator, you know. I'll even go one step further and cut my throat even a little bit further. When I go to SAI sometimes and meet some folks, you know, folks that I don't really know, it doesn't take long for me to kind of sniff out what I think are people that are just talking a good game versus those that are delivering. And again, oh, thank you. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Well, it sounded like a foolish metaphor when it came out of my mouth, this whole rock in the shoe, but I think about that. Like, we go on walks all the time. One rock in your shoe. The one wrong rock in your shoe, and you got to stop everything you're doing until you got that problem fixed. You know, so I don't want it to sound like, you know, to our viewer, I don't want it to sound like we're backtracking here. But that's the thing. I mean, one bad rock can hold up the whole system. You know, and that's what we're talking about.
Right, and I agree. You know, Matt, I loved when he started clapping because I think you know where I'm coming from, and I think as educators, it's time that we get real and begin to kind of police our own ranks in the right and the professional way. And if it starts with simple modeling, saying, I am going to be a rock star, the best rock star I can be every day, hopefully through some of that modeling, some of your teachers that might be struggling or some of your administrative peers with whom you meet, you know, what in whatever environment might start going, I think I better start figuring this out. And I'm going to tell you something. This is straight up, honest to God's truth. And I'll take this to my grave, and I mean this sincerely. Bridget Wagner saved my administrative career. If I had not met Bridget when she came, I was so close to calling it done in education because I was so frustrated. If you look at my Twitter profile now, there's a picture of a guy with his face going like, ah, that's, I keep that as a reminder, as a motivator. And when Bridget came and I started talking to her, it was like talking to the female version of me in terms of where we saw education. And again, I'll say this to anybody. She literally saved my career and got me re-energized that the game is not hopeless. The game is far from being lost. And when I started to follow folks like you, it redeemed my faith in the work that I felt like myself and many of our teachers were trying to do. And this platform, just getting this stuff out, this kind of energy and synergy, and hopefully people that watch it will go, there's a lot of people who genuinely care about the kids in which they work with and the peers with they work with. So again, kudos to you guys for putting this together.
Well, thanks. I'm a little bit nervous about what's going to happen if we keep going much longer. Matt, you got anything else?
No, I was just going to say that's really a great note to end on. And you know, if we had a sponsor for this podcast, Bridget might be a good sponsor for this.
Yeah, I just don't want it to go to her. I just don't want it to go to her head, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We'll get together in Waverly sometime. Hit up the OP.
Please do. Yeah. I'll take care of the bill.
Hey, definitely.
Take care, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot.
But appreciate you working with our schedule, Steve, and joining us on the podcast. You bring a lot of energy to the podcast. I'd love to work for you. Just experience that excitement on a daily basis.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But anything else to add, Steve? Any last minute shout outs or anything like that?
All I would say is this: it's better in the middle. It's better in the middle. Thanks, guys.
I love it.
You bet. Russ, any last-minute comments?
I don't think so. Steve nailed it tonight. Thanks a lot, Steve. I had a blast. It's a really good time.
Very good. Me as well. Blessing.
Right. You bet. You know, we are always here with
students in mind.
Have a good one,
Steve.
Thanks, Steve.